This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. A late-week surge in grain prices helped beans post solid gains for the week. And even new crop corn found a way to push more than a dime up from last Friday. And after a really positive non-farm payrolls report, inflation trade worked its way back into the conversation today. But right now, let's get back to the basics and talk cash markets.
Live from the springboard to the weekend via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Luke Beckman from Central Valley Ag. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Davis Michelson, here we are at the end of another week. We made it, brother.
We made it. Almost. Yeah. We're almost there. I mean, we've still got one more fantastic infotainment-packed program to complete.
Love it. Yeah, baby. What happened to my son? What happened to, the son.
I was going to say, what did it? Yeah, the son.
That
the,
sounded really bad, didn't it? What happened to
the joy
the
orb?
Son?
The joy orb is chased today, shall we say.
That's so disappointing. I was getting used to seeing that out there.
No,
but who knows?
We'll
I
love mean, it even know, more next time. You know, we'll love it even more.
That's right. You know, temperatures next week look fantastic. We lost a lot of snow this week. We're going to lose even more snow next week. And there are areas in the western production areas, I should say there are spots in the western production areas, like where Luke's at in northeast Nebraska, that might be looking for a little bit of precip even before we start to put some seed in the ground. And I know that we're still a ways away from making that happen, but, you know, I want to get the download from Luke on what conditions are and what producers are talking about over there around Elgin, Nebraska, because, boy, that drought monitor that was out yesterday, I've been watching the drought monitor, but it's one of those indicators that all of a sudden it doesn't really matter until I think it does matter. And
that makes sense.
all of a sudden this drought monitor, it feels like it means something when you look at how much ground it's covering in North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Western Iowa, Minnesota, into Wisconsin. There's a lot of corn area, a lot of soybean acres that dealing with some abnormally dry conditions. I don't know if it becomes a market factor for a while, Davis, but if some of these rains that are in the extended forecast with the calls for above normal precipitation in the 6-10 day, 8-14 day, if those disappoint in any of those periods, I think weather and U.S. weather can start to have an influence on our markets here before too long.
Looky there.
Yeah. Why not? Well, let's start another weather market.
I don't want to wreck the curve, but it does appear that my yard farm is emerging from dormancy in pretty decent shape.
Really?
Minimal winter kill on the yard farms thus far. It's early.
Wow.
It's early yet.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, my yard is still under about 18 inches of snow, as best I can tell.
Well, that's the timber effect.
Let's get to it. What you got in the markets?
Chip, wheat futures were slow to join the rally, but did push higher in midday trade and held on to those gains into the close. May soft red winter wheat futures tested support at yesterday's low in the overnight session before pushing back to the upside. General strength in the commodity world was based on February jobs data, with new non-farm payrolls coming in well above trade expectations. The potential for economic growth to pull commodity prices higher helped wheat close with gains despite strength in the U.S. dollar index. The chance for some rain in the U.S. southern plains capped rally potential in wheat futures. July hard red winter wheat 5.5 cents higher, 6.31¾. July soft red firmed 2¼ to 6.43¼. September spring wheat up 2¼ cents to close at 6.56¾. Chip.
Okay, listen to how the new crop wheat winter wheat contracts traded this week. July SRW down 6¾. July HRW down 6 cents. So, you know, they just kind of hung out together this week. September spring wheat futures up a penny and three quarters. It's almost like they realized, listen, with what's going on up in Canada with the prices that are available on canola, if we're going to see or get enough spring wheat acres, we're probably going to have to hold on to some here. So that might just be the start of that trade. We'll see how it performs next week.
Continued soybean harvest delays in the heart of Brazil's northern production areas are slowing the flow of soybeans to port locations, but more importantly to the corn market, they are also delaying planting of the safrinha corn crop. And in Argentina, late season arid conditions are threatening to knock more bushels off the crop. Traders will be looking for updates to South American crop estimates in Tuesday's supply and demand report from USDA. The low range open and session high close in May corn and the new contract high close in December corn keeps momentum of the corn market with the bulls to start next week. Yeah. May corn futures 13 cents higher, 545 and one half. July corn jumped 11 and one half cents to 534. December corn closed at 481 and one half, up 6 cents on the day. Chip, not too shabby in the corn market.
Really a nice performance, and what that did was it clawed back and got us to just 2 cents lower on the week in May corn futures. But for new crop corn futures, up 10 and three quarter cents on the week. So corn is fully engaged, and this acreage fight, I won't call it a battle yet, but the acreage fight is fully engaged for the new crop corn.
Wet conditions in the heart of Brazil's northern bean production areas are damaging bean quality, but crop watchers continue to say the rains are not negatively impacting total output. That's got traders looking for a steady Brazilian bean crop estimate in Tuesday's update. But late season drought in Argentina could pull total South American output lower. November bean futures pushed to a new contract high close, and May bean futures are in position to take a shot at the Feb 25 contract high of 1445 and three quarters, baby. Yeah. May bean futures 19 and a half cents higher, 1430. July beans gained 18 and three quarters cents, 1413 and three quarters. November bean futures closed at 1247 and one quarter. That's up 16 and three quarters cents on the day.
You know, I say this from time to time, and I'll say it again. If you haven't looked at the November bean chart, the daily bean chart for the new crop contract, go take a look at it again. The pattern that is at work in that market is pretty much textbook. On the week, May soybeans up 25 and three quarters, November soybeans up 24 and a quarter. So the bull spread actually worked in that bean market today. Makes me wonder if we didn't slide some bean export sales, you know, under the radar out to China this week.
May cotton was 62 points higher today at 87.76. December cotton jumped 54 points, 84.54. Have you got the week over closes on that? How do we wind up here? It was a wild ride.
Yeah, May cotton on the week was down 107 points.
Oh, I was afraid of that. That's what I was afraid of. You should have said no.
No.
Cash cattle trade is tethered to 114, limiting the ability of live cattle futures to follow today's rally in equities. April live cattle 47 and one half higher, 119.02 and a half. June cattle up a buck 2.5, 118 even. March feeders down 50 cents, 134.60. And finally, late week pressure on pork product prices capped lean hog futures. April slipped 12 and one half, 87.17 and a half. June hogs up 70 cents, 95.42 and a half. Chip.
And on the week, April live cattle down 97.5 cents at 119.02 and a half. You already said that, didn't you? That 119.02 and a half. Yeah, on the week, down 97.5. March feeder cattle down $4.07.5. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
And April lean hogs up 2.5 cents
Thank you, the week.
It's just steady as can be. Luke Beckman up next. When making corn herbicide applications, some growers choose to only apply partial rates rather than applying the full rate indicated on the label. Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here to tell us what the harm is in using that approach.
Yeah, this is really important. While applying partial rates may seem like a good way to cut costs, the truth is that it can significantly damage your ROI in the long run. This is because you're applying lower doses of herbicides that allow plants to withstand the application and survive, which can kickstart the process for tolerance and eventual resistance with these weed biotypes. The worst thing with this is that resistance typically goes unnoticed until at least 30% of weeds in the field are resistant, so it can persist and spread.
That's got to have an impact on corn growth, which eventually has an impact on yield, right?
Yeah, in addition to eventual resistance, cutting your corn herbicide rate can lead to more weed outbreaks, crop competition with weeds for nutrients like water and nitrogen, and ultimately decreased yield. Using full herbicide rates will not only be more effective in removing problem weeds, but it's also going to prevent weeds from developing new forms of resistance to that herbicide.
Okay, so which corn herbicide will give growers the best pre- and post-emergent coverage?
Yeah, Acuron corn herbicide has unmatched weed control. Better weed control equals higher yield potential. When used in a pre-emergent application at full label rates, Acuron lets you discover the extra bushels no other herbicide can, 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other corn herbicide.
Excellent, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
So, Davis, the last couple of days in the first hour, we've been talking to Wiesmeyer, Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst, about what's going on with the staffing at the Farm Service Agency offices.
Or
the service centers. Just a little bit ago, he sent me a text. He said service centers currently closed to visitors in Illinois. And I think it's more than just Illinois that these are closed. Here's what he told me. USDA service centers in Illinois are currently closed to visitors because of the pandemic. But Farm Service Agency, FSA, and Natural Resource Conservation Service, NRCS, staff continue to work with ag producers via phone, email, and other digital tools. Call your service center to schedule an appointment. You can find the contact information at farmers.gov/service-locator. Okay. So farmers.gov/service-locator.
It's a weird situation.
They're doubling down on this one. And Secretary Vilsack was talking to the Commodity Classic group this morning and addressed the issues. And basically said, listen, until we can get those workers vaccinated, we're not going to open up the doors, is kind of what I heard him say. So very important, very important. Make the phone call and get on their schedule. Okay, let's get back to the markets. Luke Beckman is with Central Valley Ag over in Elgin, Nebraska. I got that right, don't I, Luke?
Yeah, you do, Chip.
Great. Welcome, man. How you doing?
I am doing well. Hey, beautiful weather here in northeast Nebraska. It's Friday. Grain market's in the green. There's a lot to like.
Yeah, love it. Love it. What are conditions over there right now? What are you guys telling you as far as field conditions go?
Well, I think the warm-up here, we started to see frost come out. You know, we had the cold snap and some snow. A lot of the snow cover's gone at this point, Chip, so a lot of your ditches and draws might have some snow in them, but yeah, we're getting rid of the snow pretty quickly. I would venture to guess some field work could be not too far off in the distant future. We're starting to see some fertilizer, dry fertilizer, get put back on here this week. So guys have the itch for sure. You know, certainly some surface moisture there in the top part of the soil profile, but no doubt it is dry further down you go.
Yeah, can we talk inputs a little bit, Luke?
We sure could. I think producers probably did a great job of locking in inputs, at least from our perspective. Last fall, when those come out, we typically see that in our area, and a good thing they did with what's been going on. It's kind of been a narrative, Chip, that we haven't had to promote really for probably 5 to 7 years as we've gone through kind of the low end of the commodity cycle. But kind of a risk management strategy that's starting to creep back up is really the buy fertilizer, buy inputs, and hedge that purchase with some grain sales. Maybe not much of a play here with this new crop with a lot of those inputs already being locked in, but it's something we're going to start discussing with producers, especially as we start to get an indication of 22 inputs. You know, that'll start late summer, early fall next year. So probably a seed that needs to be planted at some point, especially as inputs rise, as they, you know, they follow the commodity price.
Right.
Luke,
exactly.
This may be an unfair question to you. It's me, handsome newsman Davis Michelson, just chiming in here. And just let me know if this is unfair to ask you, because I don't know. I don't know if you know this or not, and maybe nobody does. Talk to me about next fall. Is this weird? You just mentioned that sort of low price cycle, and it's been 5-7-ish years. Are we seeing a pattern reversal here that may stick with us for 5 to 7 years in the other direction?
Well, yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Have we turned the corner, and are we geared up for it? There's a lot of things you guys know that are in play that have produced this. At the top of your broadcast, you talked about the, you know, the payroll numbers and crude oil, the OPEC announcement today. A lot of things have to come together to produce, I think, the type of year we've had. You know, the 180 that we produced from, you know, June of last year to where we are now. But, yeah, you know, global balance sheets tighter, renewed demand in China. I certainly think it is the foundation that you need to create a cycle that lets us go higher for a few years. You know, we're conservative by nature, and so the risk manager in us is certainly going to be, you know, protect profits when we have that opportunity. Our fear, of course, is that higher commodity prices allow inputs to rise, and those rise pretty quickly. You and everybody else knows that the inputs tend to go the other direction a lot slower. It's kind of like inputs are a slow moving average versus commodity prices. So, we're not jumping up and down to go sell your 22 crop or even your new crop, but probably more just the principle is something that we'll start to talk about probably this summer and make sure producers are looking at that if they can get their arms around costs and you have the opportunity to lock in profits, you know, get started.
Yeah, this is generating some conversation out there, Luke, because I just got a text from a producer, Central Iowa. He says, I have guys telling me that there is no guarantee that we'll get any more fertilizer this spring, and others say no price at this time. Are you seeing a squeeze on available supplies?
I'm probably not the expert to talk to on the fertilizer side, so this is just grapevine stuff through you know, within the cooperative system. But, yeah, you know, last fall was really productive in terms of the type of fall that we had. So I think between logistics and obviously the commodity prices started to turn this winter, there's a demand for the product. Throw in the weather that we had a few weeks ago that caused some plant closures, and all that perfect storm just comes together to produce, you know, higher inputs. So I guess if there are producers out there who haven't had the chance to lock in high price, you know, the inputs, and they're now higher priced, the whole buy fertilizer, sell grain concept would certainly be in play for the 21 crop.
I was just going to ask you to go through that, put it into a risk management plan if you do have to go out, or you do make some adjustments here at the, you know, the 11 o'clock hour on what your crop mix is going to be. If you are making adjustments now and it means having to go out and put some fertilizer down, some nitrogen down, in other words, going to corn, you better be doing everything on that transaction and not just legging into it, huh?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's, you know, hedge that risk, you know, make the purchase. And the reason inputs are up here is because commodities are up here. So if you do one without the other, you're doing exactly what you said, Chip. You're kind of legging into it. It's kind of like the old acreage switch discussion where it's like, you know, soybeans look like a much better play. I'm going to switch my acres, but I don't sell anything after I make that switch. It's really irrelevant.
Right. Yep. That's there's an old market adage out of the pits that applies to that I don't think I can really say on the air, so I'm not going to. Corn bean price ratio 2.59 to 1. when you look at the spring price revenue, the revenue insurance spring price, it's a record high on the price ratio, Luke. Is it going to move some more acres to beans?
I believe it will in certain spots. That's not going to happen in Nebraska, I don't believe. Unless maybe there were some producers who did not have fertilizer locked in, you could have that happening just to reduce the fertilizer spend. But I don't think that happens in Nebraska, Chip. We ask that question every year. Producers here seem to be fairly diligent, you know, about the rotations that they're in. This is really kind of corn country. We're 2 acres of corn to 1 acre of beans in Nebraska. And that's typically pretty consistent. But I think, yeah, I think you'll see that in the Dakotas. You know, it's drier up there, so, you know, we should get some prevent plant back in both South and North Dakota. Row crops look like the ticket based on profitability. So, yeah, I think that's where
spring spring wheat won't engage in this thing, Luke. I'd sure like to see it.
Just based on the folks we talked to there, I think then it becomes a moisture conversation, Chip. If it feels like it's going to be dry, spring wheat's probably certainly going to get the nod. But if the moisture profile looks good, we've been informed that row crops look like, they're going to get the acre.
Yeah. Yeah. Doggone it. I was hoping some of the support would slide down out of the prairies and into the Dakotas for some spring wheat acres, because what's going on with that canola trade is just absolutely crazy. I don't know how a Canadian producer doesn't stick a bunch of canola in the ground and just sell it.
Mm-hmm.
It's
crazy.
Yeah,
well, you know, you mentioned it at the top. We have an acreage, what'd you call it?
Not a battle.
We're not in a battle yet, but I would say we're in a battle here, Chip. All commodities looking attractive and
cool.
I think yesterday you mentioned 182 million corn and beans combined from the outlook for them. So, you know, that would be a record.
Corn and beans. All right. Hey, we're going to talk more about that acreage mix when we come back. It's Luke Beckman, Central Valley Ag, here on AgriTalk. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Cargill is expected to boost capacity and improve efficiency at the soy crushing plants. French soft wheat exports picked up last month. The wheat ratings are edging up in France. China raises minimum purchase price for wheat for the first time in 7 years. China sets 2021 GDP target of over 6%. In reality, that's pretty conservative. Investigators from the WHO are scrapping an interim report on COVID's origin. Want to go back and take another look there. Indian cotton prices are rising, but still a relative value versus global prices. Southwest Minnesota farmland prices declined 3%, and China's New Hope completes the first construction phase of the smart pig farms. Give Pro Farmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I think maybe I will have beef for dinner. I just might. Suddenly I have this strange compulsion.
I think we should go to a dinner theater and have a steak.
Oh, man, wouldn't that be something?
That would
well,
be
Well, hello,
fantastic.
Dolly. Well, hello, Dolly. Something like that.
Well, right. Welcome back. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're having a conversation with Luke Beckman from Central Valley Ag over Elgin, Nebraska. Before we get back to Luke, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat 5.5 cents higher at 6.31¾. July soft red firmed 2.25 cents to 6.43¼. May corn futures 13 cents higher 5.45½. July corn jumped 11.5 cents to 5.34. May soybeans 19.5 cents higher 14.30. July beans gained 18.75 cents 14.13¾. May cotton was 62 points higher. $87.76. April live cattle 47.5 cents higher at $119.02.5. And April lean hogs down 12.5 cents, $87.17.5. That's your quick market recap. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Luke Beckman, Central Valley Ag over in Elgin, Nebraska. Luke, when, you know, really the March contract, when it pushed through 420, we saw a line of trucks. When we pushed through 450, we saw a line of trucks. Pushed through $5, we saw another line of trucks. Is there much corn left to move out in the countryside, Luke?
Well, I think there's a fair amount to move. The logistics of getting it moved and what needs to be sold yet is probably a different conversation. We saw producers pretty good about, you know, scattering sales Jan, Feb, March, even through April, May, and even some summer slots. So there's a decent chunk of grain that physically needs to move. I would say a pretty good chunk of it's been sold, though,
okay.
Chip. So if that explains it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get exactly what you're talking about. Now, when they did that, did they lock it all in, I mean, price and basis, or did they just lock in price and or just lock in basis? I don't know. Because I've been – the reason I'm asking, Luke, I think you know this, I've been talking about maintaining some flexibility in marketing strategies here for a while, and I just wonder if people have done that.
Yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag, Chip. I mean, with the flat price, as attractive as it was, I would say predominantly there was just a lot of cash sales taking place, and producers were keeping things pretty simple. I just think some of those prices surprised us. They were profitable at the time, and producers took advantage of that in kind of a scale-up basis. That doesn't mean there weren't sell and re-own strategies that were employed or even basis contracts that are still open, you know, today. But just as a very general statement and painting with a broad brush, you know, producers are pretty aggressively sold here on the old crop, and, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Folks wish they wouldn't have sold so early, but you know, profitable levels,
and
it made sense to do it at the time.
You bet. What about in commercial storage? Have you guys moved it to feedlots? Have you moved it to export locations? Is it moving out of your hands, or is it still kind of hanging around?
Well, in our footprint, Chip, we have a pretty active shuttle network, you know, within our company, and, you know, anybody can look at the export sales, export inspections numbers for both corn and beans to kind of see what that velocity has looked like. You know, we've had, you know, some ethanol plants in our footprint, maybe not grinding, you know, full tilt like they have in years past. And so we've really seen a redirect of some bushels through some of these shuttle assets, and not just ours, really everywhere in the Western Corn Belt. So those places have been really active. So a lot of your farmer bushels have been channeled into those assets more so than years past, and you know, commercial stocks are still, you know, at good levels. So there's a lot of grain that needs to move yet. A lot of the stuff that has moved has been a lot of farmer grain, you know, that moved the first half of this marketing year.
Yeah, it feels to me, Luke, like you're describing a pretty healthy cash market over there in Northeast Nebraska. I mean, and when I say that, I mean it's not like farmers are holding too much. The commercials aren't holding too much. It just feels like it's been a very organized kind of movement season through the winter, and it's in pretty good shape going into spring.
Yeah, organized chaos, Chip's a great way to
There you go.
Describe it.
I love that. Yeah.
It's been aggressive. The velocity of shipments, you know, has just been higher, you know, than previous years. So both in terms of transactions, that's producers physically selling the commodity and then actually getting it shipped. It's been really busy. So it feels like the second half of this year, and even starting now, we've felt that the last several weeks, that things have really slowed down in terms of, you know, the transaction side of the business. It's more about logistics at this point and executing on sales. So the back half of the year could be pretty interesting, because I think a lot of the selling has been made by the farmer. You know, they're probably 80% sold on old crop corn in this part of the country, and soybeans, you know, it's getting pretty hard to find those. So,
yeah,
you know, over 90% sold out this direction. Yeah.
Well, out this direction, Luke, you talked to some of the crush facilities. You can't even get a bid for to buy meal from them for June, July, because they don't know if they're going to have beans to crush.
Right.
It's very tight. Very tight. Okay. Supply and demand report coming your way next, or our way next week. What are you going to feature on? What are you going to focus?
Well, curious to watch the export numbers. You know, we had the 100 million bushel write down in the January report. The USDA kind of backpedaled on demand to kind of, you know, compensate for the big reduction in the final yield number in corn anyway. So we got 50 million of that back last month. Do we get another 50 back this month? Is kind of the curiosity that I'll be watching. You know, we need to see the stocks report at the end of March before they would probably tweak a feed number. But feed also was down, you know, 100 million in that January report. So just kind of curious how that comes together. That felt maybe a little bit premature as well. So the demand thing is not over on corn. Just want to see how that comes together. So definitely watching the export number next week on corn. And then, you know, the soybean balance sheet's just kind of a how do we keep the number manageable? I think the cash market is telling you the truth. But I don't believe the USDA can print a number that's probably accurate on that balance sheet, or they won't acknowledge maybe how tight it really is.
I would love to see the World Board just shock the market once and say, listen, based on everything that's going on, we need to add, I don't know what the number is, let's say 35 million bushels to the bean export estimate, and that's going to take us down to 85 million bushels. That would be a shock. And I wonder if it's not the kind of, it's not, it, that might be the dose that the market needs to prevent carryover from actually ending up at somewhere around 75 or 80 million bushels at the end of the 2021 marketing year, Luke. That's how tight supplies are. It's crazy. I'd love to see a shock.
That's been our exact conversation. Chip has just, listen, the function of the bean market at this point is it needs to ration demand. And so prices have to, you know, get to a point where they're accomplishing that. You know, so to your point, if, you know, we do see prices rally aggressively, that's kind of what needs to happen to keep us at a static pipeline minimum, you know, come August, September next year, or later this year.
Right. Yeah, without it, we may, and with some of the issues that they're having in Brazil with getting that bean crop harvested in a timely basis, the bull spreads worked in the bean market this week, Luke. I was kind of shocked by that when everything was all said and done. It almost feels like maybe we did see a little bit of export demand slide into this bean market this week. Did you hear anything on that?
Didn't feel anything in that regard, but it, you know, the whole bull spread concept makes a ton of sense. And if you had mentioned it out east, you know, if a crusher can't find physical beans, you know, and they're part of the delivery system, they're just going to own paper, and they'll stop beans and take delivery on them. And so that's going to drive bull spreads. And, you know, you'll see the May, July, you know, continue to firm.
That's right. That's absolutely reasonable thinking right there. No doubt. Okay, what's the biggest thing the next 30 days? Is it the acres or is it South America?
Do I have to pick one, or can I give you a...
I said biggest. Yeah. I didn't say...
Well, then I'm going to watch the planting intentions numbers. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to watch. I personally was quite surprised by the outlook forum numbers. I was thinking they would be larger than they were. So we'll see what the survey data says at the end of March on planting intentions. I for one, just think it's going to be a really interesting spring and a really interesting seasonal period for us. Seasonals didn't work last year at all. You know, if you're a seasonal seller, April, May, June, really the worst thing you could have done. This year it feels like that's going to work really well, just on a combination of, you know, all the typical things, spring coming together and a balance sheet that's tight. So I want to see where survey intentions come in. Prices are high for several of the commodities. So, you know, I don't think acres can be high enough for corn or soybeans to make the market feel comfortable going into that seasonal period. So we should stay elevated. It's going to be an interesting ride spring and summer here.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Luke, great conversation. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate you a lot.
Thanks for the time, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
All right. That is Luke Beckman from Central Valley Ag out in Elgin, Nebraska. Davis and I will wrap things up next here on AgriTalk.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
You know, apparently they're going to have robots feeding them pigs in the smartphones.
Yeah. Checking their temperature.
China. Yeah, yeah. You just gotta wonder which end they're gonna check. Wait a second.
But if you're gonna get the needle stuck, this is a good one to get the needle stuck on.
It's a good spot too.
It really is.
Should I say it?
It's almost like it's been engineered.
Joe, kick the table. The record's stuck again. Hit it with a stick.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Good work. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. And Hello. The engineer of the loop is Big Apple Joe Stackler.
Attaboy,
okay.
Joe.
I think Luke made a really smart comment about how he's going to look at the supply and demand reports next week. Because when he talked about the corn export number, he didn't go back to February. He went all the way back to January 1st for the comment. When he said, listen, they rolled back 100 million bushels off that export estimate in January and added 50 back in February. Because if we go back a month ago, right now, everybody was saying, well, you got to at least get the 100 million back that they took off in January and maybe add another 50, another 100 million on top of that. That gets our carryover down to 1.3, 1.35. Boom. Let's go. Instead, he reminded us that they pulled the 100 million off first and then piecemealed 50 million back last month. It makes me question, and I knew that, but thinking about it again makes me question my thoughts that it's going to be a meh supply and demand report. They might have to put some more on this corn export estimate than what I was thinking. The average trade guesses on carryover, because the report comes our way on Tuesday, so I want you to start thinking about these. Average trade guess on wheat carryover, 839 million bushels. That would be up 3 million bushels from February. On corn, 1.47 billion bushels, down from 1.502, so down 32 million. And on soybeans, 117 million bushels, down from 120 million bushels. So that's like Luke was saying, they're just going to be kind of trying to find a way to hold that bean carryover close to 120 million bushels. Another one that I perked up on when Luke said it was the seasonals should work this year. And he's right. He's right. And it's because supplies are tight enough we should have a spring scare of some sort. And when we get that scare, by golly, be ready for it. We may need to reward it at that time. Davis, so far what we have heard from the Biden administration on ethanol has been encouraging. The word out of the EPA has been good.
Yes.
Climate forward, low carbon fuel, all of that has been very encouraging. Yes. Yeah. And today, Secretary Tom Vilsack was addressing Commodity Classic, and he's kind of beating the same drum that we've been beating here at AgriTalk for a while. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, if we're truly interested in stretching the miles that we get out of our cars and out of a gallon of gas, it's going to be necessary for us to focus on octane, and there's only one way to get to high enough octane to get you to a higher mileage standards, and that's through renewable fuels.
That's through renewable fuels. And octane. It's the the value of octane in ethanol is where it's at, baby. We've been beating that drum literally for years.
Yes.
And it's good to see that it is happening. And the environmental benefit story for ethanol and the renewable fuels side of things is coming through loud and clear. There's opportunity for farmers in this climate first, climate forward. That's what I was looking for. The climate forward approach that we are seeing at USDA and throughout the Biden administration. It's pretty fascinating.
Would you say we're pulling the climate forward, Chip?
I don't know if we're pulling the climate forward,
is
Davis.
Is that the buzzword of 21? It may be. I'm going to watch for that one. Pulling the climate forward. Yeah. That's not bad.
Good. Yeah. let's round up a campaign for all of that. Okay.
I don't see why not.
Why not? National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook. This is from March 11th through the 15th. Has got above normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, even into southeast Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and all points to the east. And then normal temperatures in the rest of the Corn Belt. You've got below normal temperatures expected in the western third of the country. Above normal precipitation also expected across most of the Corn Belt. Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, Tennessee. It's a wet forecast, and a lot of that is going to be in the form of rain, so we need to keep track of that. Now, the 8 to 14 day, and this is for March 13th through the 19th, has got normal temperatures across most of the Corn Belt. We've got below normal temperatures stretching into Nebraska, Kansas, but everything else is looking at normal temperatures, and the above normal precipitation starts to push to the east and the south. So the eastern production areas in the Corn Belt are looking at above normal precip, but we've got below normal precip expected in North Dakota and northern Minnesota. So some things to watch there. And speaking of USDA Secretary Vilsack, he is going to be our guest on Monday morning. Of course, we'll have Machinery Pete, but we will also have Secretary Tom Vilsack. We've got a lot of ground that we want to cover with him. Hit me up on Twitter with some questions if you've got any for Secretary Vilsack, and I will try to get those questions answered for you. For Davis and producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thanks for listening. Monday afternoon, Brian Hoops. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.